This episode of Pharmacy to Dose, the Critical Care Podcast, is proudly sponsored by Chiesi. Chiesi is a family-owned, research-focused, sustainable pharmaceutical company accredited with both B Corp and a benefit corporation status. Chiesi is making global changes that benefits patients, providers, and healthcare organizations with forward-looking and impactful initiatives. Chiesi appreciates the integral role that clinical pharmacists play in patient care and are proud to support this community. To learn more, visit chiesi.pharmacytodose.com. Again, that's chiesi.pharmacytodose.com. Dose.com. Welcome to Pharmacy to Dose, the Critical Care Podcast, a partner of the ACCP Critical Care PRN. And I'm your host, Nick Peters. And wherever you are and however you are listening, thank you. And this is a trial of the week where I review a landmark article in critical care and emergency medicine history that was published this month. So consider this our This Month in Medical History. And today's episode is a great one. We're talking about the effect of platelet inhibition with Kangerlor during PCI on ischemic events, aka the Champion Phoenix trial. So published ahead of print in March 2013 in the New England Journal of Medicine. And we're very lucky to be joined by Jack Plenicky, cardiology pharmacist coming to us from Kansas City. And Jack and I set the scene reviewing Kangerlor's PK/PD advantages, talking about the other Champion studies and what led to the necessity of this study, Champion Phoenix. And then we dive into the trial of the week itself. What did this study find? How many of these patients would be in our ICU? And then comparing Kangerlor to our glycoprotein 2B3A inhibitors. And then closing with where are we now, we highlight pragmatic trials related to Kangerlor, including looking at switching from an IV to PO agent, while Jack also highlights his research looking at Kangerlor use in MCS patients as a bridge. Now, quick reminder, right, last episode before the 2024 Critical Care Trials March Madness bracket. This has been an absolute blast to prepare for behind the scenes. Numerous people involved that will get plenty of thanks and shout outs for all their help. I can't wait for everyone to vote and participate. So quick reminder, right, we'll have episodes previewing the entire bracket with specific region breakdowns. Now, got four bracketologists, and the bracketologists will predict what they think should or will happen. But remember, the winner is ultimately decided by you, the listeners, right? At Pharmacy to Dose on Twitter or X or Instagram. That's where the voting will take place. So join. Remember, bracket gets released Sunday, March 17th. Social media at Pharmacy to Dose or pharmacytodose.com. So it's time for a great March 2024 trial of the week right now.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
And we are very lucky to be joined by today's Trial of the Week special guest, and that is Jack Plenicky. Now, Jack is a clinical cardiology pharmacist at St. Luke's Hospital in Kansas City, Missouri, with a precepting site of the cardiac ICU. You can find him on Twitter at Jack Plenicky, his name. Jack, welcome. How are you, my friend?
I'm great, Nick. I appreciate you having me on. I've been a fan of the podcast for a long time, so it's great to come on and talk about an interesting medication and trial.
My guy, the pleasure is all mine. I'm glad you carved out some time to talk to us. But before you enlighten us, educate us on the Champion Phoenix trial in Kangerlor, gotta ask, you're in Kansas City, two-part question. Rank your level of excitement from the Super Bowl of 1 to 10. You got to be ecstatic. And then let the listeners know what's your secret barbecue spot. What's your maybe not like your ultimate secret. You can't blow up the spot, but what's your go-to Kansas City barbecue spot?
Well, Nick, I'll tell you, us winning the Super Bowl is just—it's a recurrent thing at this point. We're just going to keep doing it. So, no, I'm a huge Chiefs fan. We had a great season, and
Have you
I
been a
think we're
Chiefs
gonna.
fan? Have you been a Chiefs fan for a minute?
Oh yeah, my whole life. I
So,
grew up here in Kansas City, so I'm not one of the bandwagon, people that hopped on. I've been with them since the beginning through the struggles.
well,
So.
and that's the thing. That's what I want to highlight. What people don't know, it was tough being a Chiefs fan until Patrick Mahomes came in.
Ooh.
I mean, I'm a Colts fan. I'm going to put earmuffs for you, Jack, just in case. But like, I witnessed the biggest comeback in playoff history. It was against the Chiefs. Chiefs had a tough time. I just want to put in perspective all the Chiefs fans that are happy, all the people that are maybe angry at them. Hey, y'all have earned it. You had a few terrible decades of bad losing. So I do like that you're finally getting your flowers and have a good quarterback, good team. That's fun. But yeah, can't forget the terrible Chiefs teams that you all went through. That's why I had to ask.
Yeah, absolutely. We can just move on from thinking about all that terrible time. But
Okay, let's move to something better and barbecue. So what's the go-to barbecue spot for the Kansas City born and bred Jack?
it's got to be Joe's, the original Joe's. This is probably a highly debated topic, to be honest. But for me, it's Joe's. It's in this old gas station. You go in there, there's a million people in there. It's just good barbecue. And, but yeah, there's a lot of great. I mean, Kansas City obviously is known for their barbecue, and I know some people will say that their city is better. I will disagree, but if you're ever in town, Nick, we should get some barbecue sometime.
I like that. I like that. Now let's shift gears into what happens if you eat barbecue every day for decades. And let's talk about our champion Phoenix trial. And let's kind of set the scene and get into the background about this trial, about Kangalore itself. And what clinical advantages do IV agents like Kangalore offer compared to our standard enteral P2Y12 agents that we're familiar with, like clopidogrel, ticagrelor, prasugrel, etc.?
Yeah, Nick, I think this is a great question to get us started off. And there are a few things that I'd like to highlight that are different between Kangalore and our traditional agents, like those oral P2Y12 inhibitors that our audience might be a little bit more familiar with. So first, Kangalore is a non-thionopyridine P2Y12 receptor inhibitor. So like our oral agents, we're still blocking that ADP-induced platelet activation. We're limiting platelet aggregation. But Kangalore is selective and it is reversible. So this is actually different than our thionopyridine, so prasugrel and clopidogrel, which are irreversible platelet inhibitors. It's actually very similar to ticagrelor, and this is actually how I teach about Kangalore. I have my learners think of it as IV ticagrelor, and I think that's thinking of it that way is actually a good frame of thought, because specifically when we talk about transitioning agents, drug interactions, and even side effects. It's actually much similar to ticagrelor than some of the other agents. In terms of, I think the kinetics of Kangalore is really something to mention, as that's really the selling point of this medication. The platelet inhibition effect, the onset to platelet inhibition with Kangalore is almost immediate with a bolus. That's very different than our oral agents. So, clopidogrel takes up to sometimes 2 hours, even longer in patients with polymorphisms, those types of things, even with the loading dose. Even our more early onset agent, ticagrelor, even when it's crushed, can take up to 30 minutes. And so Kangalore is really nice in that you're going to be able to get adequate platelet inhibition, basically immediate, whether that's before balloon angioplasty, whether that's before stent deployment, whatever it is. The other really unique kinetic property of Kangalore is its half-life. So it has a half-life of roughly 3 to 6 minutes with return to normal platelet function within 1 hour of discontinuing the infusion. That is really important and really unique with Kangalore. And so in these patients that maybe are bleeding or they need to undergo a procedure or something like that, you can be pretty confident that when you turn off the infusion of Kangalore, you will have return of platelet function within a reasonable time frame compared to our oral agents, which sometimes take days, 3 to 7 days. And even our other IV agents, such as GP2B3A inhibitors, we're talking hours and hours before, especially in the setting of renal dysfunction, before return of platelet activity occurs. And so those are really the two main kinetic properties of Kangalore. In terms of the dosing, Nick, I think we'll talk about the dosing a little bit more when we get into the trials, but basically, it's FDA approval dose for percutaneous coronary intervention is 30 micrograms per kilo as a bolus, and that is followed then by 4 micrograms per kilo per minute for 2 hours or until the conclusion of the procedure, which as ever is longer, which is almost always 2 hours. Procedures, PCIs never take 2 hours, or at least something's going wrong if that's the case. And then there's also this kind of off-label dosing, which we'll discuss. It's kind of been termed the bridge dose, 0.75 mics per kilo per minute as a continuous infusion.
Incredible lead-in, because I love that you highlighted so many of those pharmacokinetic advantages, right, that something like this would have. And we'll kind of get into, did those properties lead to improved outcomes? We'll talk about that. But let's set the scene here. And today's trial of the week is Champion Phoenix, but this wasn't the only Champion trial. So what were kind of, give us some highlights of the two bigger trials leading up to this one, looking at the use of Kangrelor in MI.
So the previous trials before Champion Phoenix were both published in New England Journal in 2009, and it's really kind of where the story of Kangrelor starts before this, but in terms of the FDA approval and how it is recommended to be used in the guidelines, this is really kind of where the story of Kangrelor starts. So in 2009, two trials, Champion PCI and Champion Platform, were both published in New England Journal of Medicine, and to be honest, Nick, they're almost identical trials. They're both randomized, they're double blind, they're active control phase 3 trials, and both of them compared Kangrelor to clopidogrel in patients undergoing PCI. A little bit difference in terms of how many patients they enrolled. Champion PCI enrolled just under 9,000 patients, and Champion Platform just above 5,000 patients. But in terms of who these patients were that they enrolled, the majority of patients underwent PCI for NSTEMI. So this is really a majority in ACS population. Now, Champion PCI did allow about 1,000 patients to be enrolled with a STEMI, whereas Champion Platform did not allow STEMI patients. But for the most part, we're talking about an ACS patient population with predominantly NSTEMI. And both trials investigated if Kangrelor would reduce the primary endpoint, which was a composite of death from any cause, periprocedural myocardial infarction, or ischemia-driven revascularization at 48 hours when compared to clopidogrel. The other really main difference between the trials was timing of when clopidogrel was given. So in the standard arm, essentially. So in Champion PCI, clopidogrel was given just prior to PCI, which is basically the same time Kangrelor was initiated. But in Champion Platform, PCI or clopidogrel was actually given at the end of the PCI procedure. But overall, both these trials were actually negative trials, Nick, as they both really failed to show Kangrelor to be superior to clopidogrel regarding that primary outcome, and both were actually stopped early due to lack of efficacy. There were some secondary endpoints that were significant, specifically in Champion Platform with a reduction in stent thrombosis and even mortality in the Kangrelor arm. But remember, clopidogrel was given at the end of PCI, which, you know, generally we recommend giving our P2Y12 inhibitors prior to PCI, prior to stent deployment. So keep in mind there. And then it was also secondary outcomes, which is basically hypothesis generating at that point. Now, the biggest controversy coming out of these trials was actually the definition that was being used for myocardial infarction, as that was really what was driving that primary endpoint events within that composite endpoint. So at the time, myocardial infarction was defined basically by new Q waves in continuous EEG leads or elevations in biomarkers, which at the time, this is kind of pre-troponin era, definitely pre-high-sensitivity troponin era. So it was looking at elevations in creatinine kinase and the MB fraction of creatinine kinase, or CKMB. And this definition worked in the days where time to PCI was quite delayed, as that initial infarct would have been completed, the biomarkers would have returned to normal, and so forth. But in this more contemporary era, when time from event to PCI was much less, specifically in these patients, again, this was an NSTEMI patient population, where time from the event to the PCI was much shorter, it's difficult to determine whether the elevated biomarkers were a new event or they were just still elevated from the previous index event that allowed them to be randomized in these trials anyway. And so in 2012, the third universal definition of myocardial infarction was published. And, without boring the audience with all the intricacies of this large document, basically it gave a more clear guidance on the degree of elevation needed, and also added some criteria based on symptoms, EKG changes, angiographic criteria, etc., and basically making it more specific to identify a new periprocedural MI related to the PCI itself, which is what we now term as type 4A MI, versus, just continued elevation in biomarkers from the initial index event. And so after all of this, there was a new trial published at the end of 2012 in the American Heart Journal by the same kind of champion authors, basically combining the patient-level data from Champion PCI and the patient-level data from Champion Platform, but now using this new definition of myocardial infarction in that primary endpoint of death from any cause, myocardial infarction, or ischemia-driven revascularization, and essentially found positive results with a significant reduction in the primary endpoint in patients who received Kangalore. So Nick, that's really the trial that kind of allowed the company to continue to kind of investigate Kangalore's utility within the PCI patient population, and kind of led us into this era of Champion Phoenix.
Yeah, I love that highlight because, and I thought that was important because if you're just going through and you read Champion PCI and Champion Platform, you're probably wondering why the heck do we even have the Champion Phoenix based on those two? So I thought that was a really good overview talking about not only what those trials found, but the big reason why we're here today, and that's the change of the MI definition. And when they did that meta-analysis in those patients, they did find benefit, and here we are. Now, the only other set the scene kind of background question was, we mentioned these are all Champion trials. They all have a similar name. I always like to clarify, is this the same data set? Like sometimes for example, the box studies in TTM trials, where it's one large data set and compares different things within it. Are these completely different patients in this Champion Phoenix trial compared to Champion PCI and Platform?
That is. It is. So Champion stands for Kangalore versus standard therapy to achieve optimal platelet or management of platelet inhibition. And it's really a program. It's really the same investigators, but these are different trials with different patients and different, as we'll see, different outcomes as well. But Champion PCI and Champion Platform were both published at the same time in 2009. So some might think, oh, it's the same patient set, but they were different patients. And then Champion Phoenix in 2013, again, is a completely different patient population, just same investigators studying Kangalore.
So let's kind of get into our trial of the week, right? The effect of platelet inhibition with Kangalore during PCI on ischemic events or the Champion Phoenix trial. So reminder, I'll do a quick background review into the background study design methodology, etc. And then Jack's going to come in and talk about the results and outcomes. So published ahead of print in March 2013. It makes sense, right? You're listening to this in hopefully March 2024 in the New England Journal of Medicine. And as we discussed, the third Champion study following Champion PCI and Champion Platform. So enrolled adult patients requiring PCI for stable angina for treatment of ACS. And the full text authors, they even make the point to say that we intend this trial to be a large generalizable study. So they really tried to make it as all comers as possible. Key major exclusion criteria being the receipt of a P2Y12 inhibitor 7 days prior to randomization or receiving thrombolytic or GB2B3A inhibitor treatment 12 hours pre-randomization. So it was a prospective randomized double-blind double dummy trial. Double dummy meaning every patient will get a pill, every patient will get a infusion, just one of them will be active and one of them, just so you kind of know what double dummy means here. So patients were randomized to the intervention arm, meaning Kangalore, or that standard of care arm, meaning clopidogrel. So patients receiving Kangalore had a 30 mic per kilo IV bolus followed immediately by a 4 mic per kilo per minute IV infusion. And clopidogrel was given as a loading dose. Now, one thing I want to probably come back to this, it was given as a loading dose and either 300 or 600 milligrams was allowed. So the dose was determined by the site. The primary composite efficacy endpoint was all-cause mortality, MI, ischemia-driven revascularization or stent thrombosis in the 48 hours post-randomization, with that primary safety endpoint being severe bleeding defined by the GUSTO criteria at 48 hours. So, Jack, what did I miss in the design or methodology that you want to highlight, and then come in and talk about the patients and the ultimate outcomes that they found?
Yeah, I think you nailed it in terms of the important design and methodology, Nick. So I'll just kind of jump into the results. Ultimately, this is a pretty large study. So 11,145 patients, 153 sites were randomized. The efficacy analysis was done in the modified intent to treat group. So that was the group that received Kangalore and underwent PCI. So that was actually ended up being just under 10,000 or 11,000 patients, but still large trial. The average age was 64 years old, and unfortunately, only 28% of the patients were women and 93% were classified as white. So take that into consideration when thinking about generalizability. But in terms of who these patients are, why they underwent PCI, you know, Nick highlighted that you could have stable angina to be enrolled in this trial. And in fact, 56% of the patients in this trial underwent PCI for stable angina. Only 25.7% underwent PCI for an NSTEMI, and a minority, only 18%, underwent PCI for STEMI. Now, we kind of talked about that timing of PCI was getting much shorter, timing from onset of symptoms to PCI was getting much shorter, and as seen in this trial, the median time from hospital admission to PCI was only 4.4 hours. In terms of the antithrombotic therapy, Nick did mention that the loading dose of clopidogrel was really up to the sites. And so 75% of patients underwent the 600 milligram dose. The rest underwent a 300 milligram loading dose. The majority of patients did receive heparin as their periprocedural anticoagulation, and 95% did receive aspirin. Just some other characteristics of the PCI itself. The median duration of the PCI was about 18 minutes. And then 55% of patients underwent a drug-eluting stent, 42% bare metal stent, and 5% underwent balloon angioplasty. So looking at that primary endpoint, I'll just kind of review. It was death from any cause, myocardial infarction, ischemia-driven revascularization, and stent thrombosis, so a four-point composite here. At 48 hours, those that were randomized to Kangalore had a significant reduction in that primary endpoint, about 4.7%, versus those that received clopidogrel at 5.9%. Odds ratio was 0.78, confidence interval was 0.66 up to 0.93, with a p-value of 0.005, all of this corresponding to a number needed to treat for that primary endpoint of 84 patients. In terms of safety, major bleeding was actually similar, and this was based on the GUSTO criteria, as Nick mentioned, but also they looked at other bleeding criteria in the supplement, and TIMI major bleeding was also similar as well in terms of major bleeding events. There was a little bit increase in minor bleeding events. Most of this was due to groin hematomas. A lot of this was femoral access in terms of the PCI. And then importantly, and I think, again, kind of keeping with the notion of it's very similar to ticagrelor, there was an increased incidence of dyspnea with Kangalore than clopidogrel. It was transient. It was only about 1.2% versus 0.3%. But again, kind of keeping in that notion of thinking of it kind of like ticagrelor, it may carry a risk of dyspnea due to that kind of non-thionopyridine modality. But ultimately, Nick, the authors concluded that Kangalore significantly reduced the rate of ischemic events, including stent thrombosis during PCI, with no significant increase in severe bleeding when compared to clopidogrel.
All right, so you mentioned that primary outcome met statistical significance, but we both highlighted it's a composite outcome. So, and previous two RCTs, right? Big point, it did not. So was this significance driven by any specific event in this composite outcome? Is it like one of those scenarios where, oh, we showed this big event, but actually it was the least important of all the four composites that was actually significantly different? Or what did this study find?
So it was, so remember the previous two studies, Champion PCI and Champion Platform, were a 3-point composite. So all cause death, MI, and ischemia-driven revascularization. But in the secondary outcomes, they showed maybe this potential signal for benefit in stent thrombosis. So, you know, Champion Phoenix kind of added a fourth outcome to this big 4-point composite of stent thrombosis, probably kind of cushioning the endpoint rate events here. And that is really what was driving this significant reduction in this primary outcome, was really stent thrombosis, also MI, but, you know, really stent thrombosis.
So, you know, one of the things in the, as you dig into this, into the cardiology world, right, is the definition of stent thrombosis and how that can ultimately define or help you figure out what you find. So did the investigators define how they diagnosed stent thrombosis, or was it one of those that they just listed stent thrombosis, it happened, we kind of move on?
Yes and no. So the endpoint for stent thrombosis was defined as definite stent thrombosis or intraprocedural stent thrombosis. So it's kind of this two-part definition. So definite stent thrombosis was defined according to the criteria of the Academic Research Consortium. This is a very reasonable definition. It basically, you had to have angiographic confirmation of the thrombus and ischemic symptoms, new EKG changes, biomarker changes, etc. You know, the trial duration was only 48 hours, so we're mostly looking at definite acute stent thrombosis rather than subacute, late, or very late. Now, the other part of that definition was intraprocedural stent thrombosis, and this was defined as any new or worsened thrombus related to the stent procedure that was confirmed angiographically. There's a lot less detail on how this was actually defined. You know, again, is how did they define worsened thrombus? Was the thrombus already there? How do we know what was worsened or not? But they did send all of these potential endpoints to a core laboratory, so at least there was some consistency in adjudicating these events. Intraprocedural stent thrombosis was the driving factor in the overall stent thrombosis endpoint, so that's definitely something to consider. Specifically, we know, because we know a little bit less about how that was defined. But overall, you know, I know some people see this as a limitation of the study, but I don't think it's a large limitation. I think, you know, having that core laboratory to kind of adjudicate these events definitely helps.
So the other thing, right, when we were listening to this trial, right, about 18% of patients were diagnosed as STEMI patients. So thinking about this patient population and some of the patients that, example, like you would see in your CICU, like, would you define these patients as critically ill? Would a lot of these patients who were enrolled in the Champion Phoenix trial be patients that you would see in your cardiac ICU?
Yeah, likely not. There wasn't anything in the exclusion criteria that specifically excluded these patients, like, you know, cardiogenic shock type patients. But remember, 57% of these patients in this trial underwent PCI for stable angina. All right, this is really an all-comers trial. It's very similar to the PLATO trial with ticagrelor. It's like, you know, anyone undergoing PCI can be enrolled. And as you highlighted, only 18% were STEMI patients. So these probably were not those crashing STEMI patients in cardiogenic shock that, you know, many of us see, whether it's in the CICU or CVICU or so forth.
And, you know, when you think about our most at-risk patients, right, those STEMI patients, management with our GP2B3A inhibitors, the glycoprotein 2B3A inhibitors, also enters as a potential treatment option. So how does, like, use of this class of medications interact or change our use of IV cangrelor? Because on the surface, it sounds like that's probably a similar population you would think to use these two agents in.
Yeah, so this could be a whole kind of topic in itself. You know, for those that don't have cangrelor on formulary, a GP2B3A inhibitor such as eptifibrotide, integrelin, is probably the agent that you're using in these patients who are unable to take oral P2Y12 inhibitors, you're concerned about absorption, or, you know, as the guidelines suggest for patients needing thrombotic bailouts, no reflow scenarios, and so forth. To kind of remind the audience, you know, GP2B3 inhibitors block that final pathway of platelet aggregation, or they're competing with von Willebrand's factor, fibrinogen, and they actually have been shown to be beneficial in this setting of kind of only aspirin as your antiplatelet, or like even in inadequate oral P2Y12 inhibition. Though it is important to know that most of the data with GP2B3A inhibitors are kind of in this pre-oral P2Y12 era. In terms of studies comparing Kangalore with our glycoprotein inhibitors, there's not any really large randomized controlled trials. There was a phase two study of actually Kangalore that was a randomized controlled trial that they compared Kangalore to abiciximab, which is no longer available. It was only like just under 200 patients, and so wasn't really able to look at efficacy. They showed probably similar efficacy, but and with numerically lower bleeding rates with Kangalore. But one study I do want to highlight was a 2021 study in the American Heart Journal. This was retrospective, but they compared 2,000 patients who received Kangalore or a glycoprotein inhibitor for PCI, with most of the patients, about 66%, undergoing PCI for an ACS event. And overall, there was no difference in their primary outcome of procedural success or in-hospital ischemic events, but major bleeding was significantly increased with the glycoprotein inhibitor, about 5.1% versus only 1.7% with Kangalore. Also, vascular complications and length of hospital stay was also higher in the glycoprotein inhibitor group. Our most common glycoprotein inhibitor is eptifibratide. It does have a long plasma half-life, about 2 hours, and undergoes renal elimination. So in patients with renal dysfunction, that half-life is even prolonged. And so we have had multiple studies across, a large variety of PCI literature demonstrating that these GPIs do increase the risk of bleeding. And when we're looking at this short half-life with Kangalore, its non-renal metabolism to an inactive metabolite, and the Kangalore is just more attractive, in my opinion. Cost is a consideration. That's definitely the case. Kangalore costs about $900 a vial, where our GPIs are much cheaper. But to me, especially in our high-risk, cardiogenic shock patients who are likely to have some level of renal dysfunction, that's for sure. I generally prefer Kangalore due to its kinetics. Now, in terms of using them together, in my opinion, that doesn't make a ton of sense, just because it's probably just going to increase the risk of bleeding. Our GPIs are really our biggest gun antiplatelet agents. Remember, they're blocking that final common pathway. And so if you're going to use a glycoprotein inhibitor, I'm not sure Kangalore is really adding much benefit to you. There was a post-hoc analysis of patients who received bailout glycoprotein inhibitors in the CHAMPION studies, all three CHAMPION studies together. It was about 12% of the total population, where in CHAMPION PHOENIX, there was only about 4%. But in the other CHAMPION studies, they didn't specify they had to use GPIs for bailout. So it ended up being about 12% of the total population. And they actually showed that using glycoprotein inhibitors on top of Kangalore was associated with significant higher rates of bleeding. And so I think that's really the key takeaway is the kinetics of Kangalore, in my opinion, make it much more favorable for these certain situations. If you're going to use a glycoprotein inhibitor, you do have evidence to do that. It is reasonable, but keep in mind this long half-life and definitely its increased risk of bleeding.
This episode of Pharmacy to Dose is proudly sponsored by Chiesi. Providing innovative pharmacologic therapies for over 85 years, Chiesi is committed to supporting the clinical pharmacist community and the patients you serve. To learn more, visit chiesi.pharmacytodose.com. What a great comparison of our, like you kind of said, right, our two biggest guns and weighing, it's kind of always a balance of thrombosis and bleeding and talking through the considerations, some of the, you wouldn't say highest quality if we're thinking grade methodology evidence, but the evidence that we have showing the bleeding risk, showing the outcomes and things, I think is really important. So incredible review of, we set the scene, what was happening with Kangalore, kind of highlighted our trial of the week, talking about that CHAMPION PHOENIX trial. Now let's talk about like, where are we now? What are we using and doing with this agent since the study? So we mentioned CHAMPION PHOENIX published in 2013. Right, it is March 2024 now. So, do we have any updated studies or maybe research groups that are looking at more of our, what you'd say, quote unquote, real world use of Kangalore is? Because, like you said, the CHAMPION PHOENIX trial was an all comer. And I have a hard time believing that stable patients with, stable people with unstable angina going to PCI, that everyone's getting Kangalore. So, do we have any data on like our real world use of Kangalore kind of since this trial?
Yeah, we do. So there is a registry that is ongoing. It's called the CAMEO Registry, stands for Kangalore and Acute Myocardial Infarction Effectiveness and Outcomes Registry. And it's led by Jennifer Reimer. She is a interventional cardiologist at Duke, and actually from a pharmacy standpoint by Jeffrey Washam. He is also a cardiac ICU pharmacist at Duke. And really the CAMEO Registry is really investigating some of this real world data of Kangalore in the PCI setting. And there's really been, two main publications thus far out of the CAMEO Registry. The most recent one was published in the journal Sky, and they basically looked at bleeding rates in patients who had received Kangalore who had upstream oral P2Y12 inhibitor therapy. So they received, clopidogrel, ticagrelor, prasugrel, whatever it was, before receiving Kangalore. And this is important because a majority of patients in the CHAMPION studies, all patients in CHAMPION Phoenix, were P2Y12 naive. And this is actually reflected in the FDA approval and in the guidelines. Is it's really for these P2Y12 naive patients. But in real world practice, a lot of times patients are coming in on P2Y12 inhibitors. They got loaded and then they, threw up their ticagrelor, so we're not sure about how much was absorbed, all these types of things. And overall, they showed that there was really no difference in major bleeding between these patients that had received upstream P2Y12 inhibitor therapy versus those patients that did not. So, in my opinion, this just gave me a lot more confidence and reassurance that we're probably not going to see at least a significant increase in bleeding by using both agents or having both agents on board. Now, the other publication was published in 2022, and that was out of the Journal of the American Heart Association. And I think this one deserves a bit more discussion, particularly with our pharmacist audience here on the podcast. And this publication examined Kangalore use patterns as well as transition to oral P2Y12 patterns in patients who received Kangalore for PCI. And there, I think there's a few findings that I want to highlight. The first one was that the use of Kangalore was higher in patients with STEMI compared to NSTEMI. So 76% STEMI, 37% NSTEMI. And remember, that's pretty novel. Most of our trials did not include STEMI patients. And if they did, it was a lot lower proportion compared to either stable angina or even NSTEMI. And so what we can see is that for those that are using Kangalore, we tend to be using it more in that higher risk STEMI patient population. Another finding that is interesting, of the 819 patients who received Kangalore, 96% received the bolus and infusion. That is reassuring, as that does reflect the approved dosing strategy, though not all patients received the correct bolus dose, and not all patients received the correct dose of the infusion. So that definitely is an area for optimization there. Now, interestingly, 38% of the patients in this analysis received the infusion for less than 2 hours. Remember, that's what the FDA approval is. It says 2 hours or for the duration of the procedure, which is almost always less than 2 hours. So it's whatever's longer. And 11% of patients actually had the infusion stopped in the cath lab. Now, I'll be honest, Nick, between you and me, and I guess whoever's listening to this podcast, this actually reflects my practice site as well. We tend to stop the infusion in the cath lab, mainly for consistency. I think our interventionalists are kind of type A, and they like to keep, a oversight of specifically the transition from IV Kangalore to oral P2Y12 inhibitors, which we'll talk about. And, in my opinion, there's not probably any magic to this 2 hours. It's not like it takes the drug 2 hours to work. We know that it's working and, pretty much immediate. Another thing to consider is where I live in Missouri. We tend to have patients who are on the heavier side of weight, and I definitely don't want to make two bags from an operational standpoint. It's 50 milligrams per bag. For some patients who are definitely in the obese category, I don't want, to run it for 2 hours and basically one bag gets them, 75% of the way, and then I have to make a whole new bag just to run it for another 15 minutes. From a practicality standpoint and a cost standpoint, that doesn't make a lot of sense to me, personally. But piggybacking off of this point, I think the most important finding from this registry was that many patients were actually not transitioned to an oral P2Y12 inhibitor appropriately. So to kind of review for the listeners, transitioning to oral agents is actually kind of complex, a little bit more complex than you might think. So for ticagrelor, it's actually really easy. As I mentioned, think of Kangalore as Ticagrelor. It's basically the same. There's no drug-drug interactions, and Ticagrelor can be given at any time during the infusion up until the end of the infusion when you turn off the drip. This lack of drug interaction was confirmed in a few studies, SWAP5 study, the Cantik study, for those that want to do a little bit more pharmacodynamic reading. However, clopidogrel and prasugrel, there is a drug-drug interaction. And giving the oral agent at any time, other than at the end of the infusion, may lead to inadequate platelet inhibition. That's likely due to Kangalore preferentially binding to the P2Y12 receptor, preventing that irreversible inhibition with prasugrel and clopidogrel's active metabolite. And specifically with prasugrel, this was recently confirmed in the SWAP6 study. And that they looked at the use of prasugrel and Kangalore together and basically confirmed this drug-drug interaction. And so what they found in this analysis, Nick, is that 17% of patients had greater than a 1 hour gap between Kangalore cessation and oral P2Y12 initiation. And it was actually highest in those that transitioned to clopidogrel, which is our slowest onset agent. So you're talking about potentially multiple hours of inadequate platelet inhibition in these patients post PCI, who, again, a lot of these patients were post-STIMI, so they're probably in a prothrombotic state, and that just scares me, to be honest. And so I think that was really the main findings from that paper in 2022 out of the CAMEO registry.
And that's such an important highlight. I want to go back to that transitioning, the SWAP5 and SWAP6 studies from the CAMEO registries. And yeah, I love that you shouted out. Look at us. It's March. We're shouting out Duke colleagues here. I know. But shout out to all the Duke colleagues in the CAMEO registry and all those involved, because it's really important. And there may be some listeners who are listening and it's like, I'm not going to be able to control how Kangalore is given in my cath lab. The interventionalists kind of do what they want. Okay. You could clearly, though, have a role in making sure that you get them transitioned appropriately and you make sure you take advantage of that. So there's always a role for pharmacists making sure that we're using this agent appropriately. I also like that we're kind of highlighting, hey, let's talk about some of the real world things. And you mentioned, stopping things in the cath lab. We'll get to some medication safety considerations, but I think that's a big one when you have an agent like this that has risks, if used inappropriately. Making sure you have stop gaps in place, I think, is really important. Now, one of the other big pieces from this Champion Phoenix study is it was compared to clopidogrel, right? And you mentioned, I like this comparison. I'm probably going to steal it from you, that it's IV ticagrelor is Kangalore, and I kind of like that. Some would say that that's a limitation, that clopidogrel isn't necessarily the standard. It should maybe be ticagrelor or prasugrel. So in your opinion, and maybe anecdotally or from talking with others, is clopidogrel still used? Is this as big of a limitation as maybe those not in the cardiology world? Is that as big of a limitation as we maybe think it is?
So it is a limitation, Nick, and I think it is the major limitation of Champion Phoenix. Some would also say that a limitation is that all-comers study, which you could argue, depending on how you use Kangalore, you could say that it's actually a pro of the study, that I can use it in everybody. But keep in mind about the time frame that this study was done. So PLATO and TRITON-TIMI-38, which is the ticagrelor and prasugrel versus Plavix studies, were published in 2007 and 2009, respectively, which is really that same time frame of the Champion program was kind of started and getting running. So clopidogrel was the major P2Y12 inhibitor used at the time. I think from kinetic and pharmacodynamic data, we know that Kangalore is superior to ticagrelor and prasugrel in regard to platelet inhibition at the time of stent deployment. So it is plausible that this would result in better patient outcomes, such as reduction in stent thrombosis or MI. However, Nick, we've seen in other trials of antiplatelet monitoring that just targeting a number does not exactly improve patient outcomes. All right? We've looked at trials that have looked at high platelet reactivity and, oh, you're a Plavix non-responder, let's transition you to clopidogrel or to ticagrelor or to prasugrel. And although, as pharmacists, we love this precision medicine, we think it's fun, it hasn't actually shown to be beneficial in all of these trials in terms of actual hard patient outcomes. So although we know that Kangalore leads to a more potent and quicker antiplatelet effect than some of our newer agents, whether that actually translates to clinical outcomes is still definitely unknown. I think we also have to kind of think about where we are today in terms of our PCI technology. We have better stents. We have our operators are more familiar with stent thrombectomy or aspiration thrombectomy, atherectomies. We're using intravenous ultrasound much more often to look at ensuring adequate stent deployment, stent size. You know, all these things are reducing that risk for stent thrombosis and periprocedural MI, which again is the signal that we saw of really where Kangaroo was superior to clopidogrel. So, you know, I think if you, for those that are, you know, saying, oh, it maybe not be that large limitation, I think if you look at the point estimates in Plato and Triton-TIMI, they're really similar in terms of stent thrombosis and MI. Though keep in mind that Champion Phoenix was a 48-hour study, and Plato and Triton-TIMI are like 12 months or greater studies. So that's obviously a thing. But ultimately, Nick, I think this is really where it comes down to. If you're going to use Kangaroo as it was studied in Champion Phoenix, so this all-comer study, you're going to use it in stable angina, you're going to use it whenever, then I think the comparator being clopidogrel is a major limitation because our more potent agents were really not sure if they would be similar and the cost probably doesn't outweigh the benefit potentially. I think if you're going to use Kangaroo in a more select patient population, specifically those that might be in cardiogenic shock, that aren't getting that oral absorption, those that can't even take oral medications, then it doesn't matter what oral medication you decide to compare it to because that oral medication is not going to work anyway. You know, so it really is like, doesn't really matter. And so I think that's really what it comes down to is how you're going to use Kangaroo at your center of trying to decide how big of a limitation the clopidogrel being the comparator group is.
And so we mentioned in the intro, you know, what we've talked about most is using it, you know, peri and intraprocedurally for PCI patients. But there's another really big patient population we use Kangaroo in. Some may only be familiar with these patients on it, to be honest. So how does our dosing for this specific indication, you know, highlight not only what that is, but how the dosing differs?
Yeah, so the other big patient population is that Kangaroo can be used in is when, quote, you know, bridging a patient to something, generally to surgery, or to a potentially able to get an oral medication. And this was specifically studied in the Bridge trial. And they investigated the use of Kangaroo to maintain platelet inhibition after clopidogrel discontinuation prior to CABG. So to kind of remind the audience, you know, clopidogrel is generally recommended, depending on what you look at, to be stopped about, you know, 5 to 7 days prior to CABG therapy. And that's just to reduce that risk of CABG-related bleeding. But in these patients who are, you know, had specifically recent PCIs, that can be a very vulnerable period that you may not want to allow them to not have adequate platelet inhibition. And so that's kind of what Kangaroo was testing here, was can we use Kangaroo to maintain that adequate platelet inhibition and then be able to turn it off 1 hour before the procedure, full platelet recovery occurs right before they go and do the bypass. So in summary, you know, using Kangaroo in the Bridge trial did maintain appropriate platelet inhibition up until surgery with platelet functioning returning to normal just prior to surgery after Kangaroo discontinuation. That's kind of that product of its quick half-life. And, you know, there's really no difference in any major bleeding in this trial. So that was reassuring.
Now you mentioned, right, yes, I think we most classically think of we're bridging to CABG, right? Like they saw something in the cath lab they didn't like, you know, maybe you had your LAD, your three vessel disease, and you want to get surgery. But I think we would be remiss if we didn't talk about your first author study in the Journal of Cardiothoracic and Vascular Anesthesia, that your kind of research had a different indication for bridging. So summarize, you know, your peer-reviewed research looking into a specific use of Kangaroo.
Yeah, Nick. Well, first, I thank you for allowing me to kind of highlight this work. So I was fortunate enough to work with really a brilliant team of investigators. So Adam Muhammad, Charles Hayes, Tim Berry, Betsy Thomas, Julie Welge, and then our physician champions, Jonathan Kozin, Michelle Haynes, and Larissa Zarov. to really describe our hospital's use of Cangrelor in patients on mechanical circulatory support. This work that we did and kind of taken together with work done by other all-star pharmacists, so Doug Jennings at New York Presbyterian, Stephanie Bowman at Memorial Hermann, and Allison Katz at NYU, kind of adds to this growing evidence of really the complexity of not only antiplatelet management, but antithrombotic management in patients post-PCI in cardiogenic shock on mechanical circulatory support. So ultimately, we described the use of Cangrelor as a bridging strategy in 19 patients who were post-PCI on mechanical support using an antiplatelet monitoring strategy, which was the Verify Now test for most patients. Our institution targets platelet reactivity units, or PRUs, of about 50 to 208. In terms of who these patients were, a majority of these patients were post-PCI for STEMI, so 68%, mainly being LAD infarcts. In terms of the MCS device, a majority of patients, 72%, were on VA ECMO, with 84% of those patients also being on some type of Impella device platform for concomitant LV venting strategies. The median duration of MCS was about 6 days in our study, with 74% of patients receiving therapeutic heparin as their anticoagulation strategy, which I know can be different at some institutions, so keep that in mind in terms of generalizability. In terms of most common indication for Cangrelor, so this is really kind of getting into that different indication, in our study was as a bridge to decision. So we are an advanced therapy center where we do have cardiac transplant and LVAD potentials for patients. And so a lot of times these patients were transitioned to Cangrelor while we were undergoing that evaluation for whether they were going to be a cardiac transplant or LVAD candidate. Remember, these patients, most of them were on some type of mechanical support. Many of these patients are status one. So if they were accepted for transplant, they would have gone pretty quickly and we wouldn't have wanted to have oral P2Y12 inhibitors on board. But overall, the main findings of, again, our retrospective descriptive study was the following. 84% of patients were initiated on Cangrelor doses of 0.5 micrograms per kilo per minute or less. That is less than the kind of typical bridge dosing of 0.75. 53% of patients required dosage adjustments. Majority of those adjustments were based on PRU values or bleeding events. And all patients that required a dosage adjustment, which were mostly dose reductions, were on VA ECMO. Overall, the median final Cangrelor dose was 0.3 mics per kilo per minute. Our primary outcome was incidence of bleeding and thrombotic events while on Cangrelor. And overall, we only had one major bleeding event, which was much lower than the previous studies that had used higher median doses, like the 0.75 that was done in the bridge study. And very importantly, we did not observe any thrombotic events in any patient. So overall, our main conclusion was that, you know, in using a platelet reactivity monitoring strategy for Cangrelor may reduce major bleeding in patients on MCS. Lower starting doses definitely appear feasible with no observed increased risk of thrombotic complications. Now, I do encourage listeners, there's a ton of information in the manuscript, and there's also multiple paragraphs on the limitations of this trial because there are definitely plenty of limitations. The big ones being, it's a retrospective design describing just our center's practice, so keep that in mind. There is a large heterogeneity of patients, and this really just kind of reflects how complicated managing these patients can be. There is also a pretty small sample size, only 19 patients, though to our knowledge, it is the largest description of practice thus far. And then a big question mark for me is still the unknown effect of the MCS devices themselves, what effect they have on our antiplatelet monitoring strategies. Do they affect the Verify Now test in a way that would not allow us to measure Cangrelor's, antiplatelet activity, essentially?
What a great research idea, because I'm guessing that anecdotally that there are probably institutions that use this strategy that are thinking of ways to use Cangrelor beyond pre-PCI, pre-CABG. So I love that you're contributing to the literature, making sure that we're using this safely in all of our patient populations. And as we kind of transition, we'd be remiss not to talk about some medication safety principles. And Jack, you've peppered a couple of these in throughout, and I think they've been so good that I want to be sure we ask and highlight them at the end. But when you're Using Kangalore at your institution, what are some tips or tricks to make sure, from maybe an operation or med safety perspective, that everything's kind of being done safely and effectively?
Yeah, Nick, this is such an important point. I think it really starts by just having the conversations with and starting these discussions with all involved parties. So we're talking about the interventionalists. We're talking about cath lab nursing. We're talking about recovery staff, ICU staff, the pharmacists on you know, the different transitions of care units wherever your patients go post PCI. I think, you know, for some institutions, optimizing order sets might be very beneficial for them. You know, having a Kangalore for PCI order set that links to a 30 microgram per kilo bolus and then a 4 microgram per kilo per minute. You know, I think there is a little bit of worry in, you know, having that infusion have a set duration of 2 hours, because if it's 2 hours, the nurse doesn't know that they need to give the oral agent at the same time and it turns off. And then, you know, you're, so I think ultimately, I think it, each institution is going to be a little bit different, right? They're going to know what's going to be best for them. I think the most important thing is just discussing these important outcomes that we've seen from the Cameo registry and where we fall through, and where we might leave our patients in a higher risk than we want them to, and try to develop policies, protocols, procedures, order sets, what have you, to try to limit these, you know, fallouts essentially.
Well, Jack, this was awesome. Not only an incredible kind of historical look at how we were using Kangalore even up to the Champion Phoenix, but then also talking about, hey, real world, how are we taking this data that we have and applying it to our patients now? Reach out to Jack. Remember, at Jack Plenicky on X. Let him know what an awesome job he did. Jack, greatly appreciate your time, expertise. This was awesome. I think really gave a great highlight on Kangalore and kind of what we know now. So we greatly appreciate you.
Well, I appreciate it, Nick. Again, thanks for having me, and look forward to further collaboration in the future.
And another huge thanks to Jack. This was awesome. I know everyone learned at least something while listening. I'm betting on multiple things. Let him know how great that was. At Jack Plenicky, his name. Always like when you reach out to me too, at Pharmacy to Dose, T-O to Dose, pharmacy2dose.com. If you want to send me that email message, pharmacytodose@gmail.com. Reminder, the 2024 Critical Care Trials March Madness Bracket goes live Sunday, March 17th. That's when you can get the bracket. You get to pick what is the most influential, important, best trial in critical care history. But until next time, I'm Nick Peters, and this is Pharmacy to Dose, the Critical Care Podcast. The Critical Care PRN optimizes drug therapy outcomes by promoting excellence and innovation in clinical pharmacy practice, research, and education. For more information, go to critprn.accp.com. Again, that is critprn.accp.com. The podcast provides general information only and does not offer individualized medical or professional healthcare services, including pharmaceutical advice. The contents and materials in the podcast are not intended to be a substitute for inpatient pharmaceutical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Use of the contents and materials in the podcast does not constitute a pharmacist-patient relationship. As a result, the information in and materials linked to this podcast are applied at the user or patient's own risk. Users and patients should consult their physician or personal healthcare professional. The user or patient should not ignore or delay seeking care because of something they heard on this podcast. In case of an emergency, the user or patient should contact their physician, call 911, or go to the nearest medical emergency facility. The views and statements expressed on this podcast are those of the host and guests and should not be interpreted to reflect the official position or policy of ACCP or the Critical Care PRN. ACP and the Critical Care PRN disclaim any and all liability or responsibility for any direct, indirect, incidental, special, consequential, or any other damages, including without limitation, loss of profits arising out of any use of reference to, reliance on, or inability to use the podcast, its contents, and materials.